live, on air, online, and on the Highland Radio app. This is Highland Radio News.
Good evening, I'm Michaela Clark with the news at 5 o'clock. Coming up in this bulletin, Ireland will have access to 16 million COVID-19 vaccine doses over the course of next year. A student nurse from Donegal says Health Minister Stephen Donnelly's argument over pay for student nurses is an insult. A cross-border multi-agency working group established in the aftermath of the bog slippage at the site of Mean Bog Wind Farm near Barnesmore Gap continues to meet on an ongoing basis. And the Foreign Affairs Minister says the British government don't always behave as if they are looking for a Brexit deal. Those stories to follow in full, plus more, and we'll have the latest in sport with Oisin Kelly coming up at about 5:15, followed by farming news and views with Chris Ashmore. But first in news, Ireland will have access to 16 million COVID-19 vaccine doses over the course of next year. The head of the HSE says it's possible the vaccine will start to become available here by early January. Casey O'Riordan reports.
The European Commission has signed advance purchase agreements with six pharmaceutical companies, including Pfizer and Moderna, giving Ireland access to 16 million doses. The HSE's Dr. Colm Henry says the National Immunisation Advisory Committee will advise who should be prioritised for vaccination.
I don't expect there to be any surprises in terms of looking at what these vulnerable groups are, but it's important for everybody's common understanding that we have an entity such as NIAC to advise.
Nine ultra-cold freezers that can hold 200,000 doses each have been acquired to store the vaccines. HSE CEO Paul Reid says there's also existing storage capacity at City West.
We'll increase that as required if needed. It ultimately depends on the mix of the vaccines that we're utilising and the storage requirement.
A high-level task force met this week to discuss how to best roll out COVID-19 vaccines in Ireland and will present its strategy to government on Friday week.
In the north, 456 new COVID-19 cases have been recorded today, and there have been an additional 11 COVID-related deaths. The death toll in Northern Ireland now stands at 1,026, and since the start of the pandemic, there have been more than 53,700 cases of coronavirus. A review of student nurses' alliances is underway, according to the Taoiseach. Any recommendations made by the review will be implemented in September next year. It was revealed today student nurses who lost jobs due to COVID would be allowed to claim PUP payments from the date the employment ended. Last night, the government voted against an opposition motion on restoring pay to students on placement during the pandemic. Sonia, a student nurse from Donegal, says Health Minister Stephen Donnelly's argument is an insult.
You listen to the Minister for Health's argument that COVID isn't really as bad now, so why would we be looking to get paid again like they were in March? And I suppose that kind of hits home, because it's kind of insulting for somebody to say that when they actually don't know what it's like in the hospital and they don't know what it's like to have to work in the conditions, whether he thinks COVID is as bad now as it was. So it's hard to listen to, really. Whether it's first year, second year, or whether it's interns like herself going out now in December, the work is indescribable unless you really know how a hospital works. And, I mean, you can listen to the news and you can see that maybe the numbers are going down in the hospital or the numbers are going down in the country, but the reality is very, very different in the hospital, whether there's one patient or 1,000 patients there with COVID or with any other disease. It's just incredible the work the students have to go to, and not forgetting that we're just after finishing maybe 10 weeks without any income at all, and now to have to go back out onto placement knowing that, you know, the first to third years aren't going to get any pay, and knowing as interns we're going to get less than the minimum wage, it's really hard to come to terms with, to be honest.
Well, Donegal Deputy Pearse Doherty says the government's approach to payments for student nurses during the pandemic isn't good enough.
With our hospitals and health services put under pressure like never before, student nurses and student midwives have stepped up and have stepped into the breach. They have served their patients, they have worked alongside hospital staff, and they have provided excellent care in such difficult circumstances. And the Irish people are proud of them and proud of their service. But they have been taken for granted by government. Last night, your government voted against a motion to pay student nurses and midwives for the work that they do. Many of these student nurses and midwives are asked to work for no pay. And that isn't good enough, Taoiseach. Nobody believes that that is good enough, bar your government. And it won't be lost on the public that at the same time as these workers are being asked to go without pay as they work in the front line. TDs in this House have been offered in the last year two pay rises on top of their very generous salaries. Student nurses and midwives, like all those in the front line, have kept our health services together. For the patients in our hospitals who receive the care from our student nurses, they don't see them as student nurses. They see them as the person that's providing care for them. They see them as nurses. They see them as the person at the end of their bed or the side of their bed that is caring for them, that is helping them recuperate, that is providing them with the essential services. The reality is that these student nurses and midwives are being taken advantage of. They're being exploited, Taoiseach. They're being taken for granted, and they deserve so much more. Not claps, not slogans, not platitudes, but they deserve to be paid.
Donegal County Council has confirmed that the cross-border multi-agency working group established in the aftermath of the bog slippage at the site of Main Bog Wind Farm near Barnesmore Gap continues to meet on an ongoing basis. Officials from the council and other agencies say they have inspected the site of the wind farm development and confirmed that the only ongoing works observed were emergency works being carried out to prevent further bog slides or mitigate the impacts of the initial bog slide. Cleona Dwyer has more.
Following the bog slippage, the developer of the wind farm has been carrying out significant works under their emergency response plan to reduce the risk of further peat slides and to mitigate the impact of the initial peat slide. The council says the emergency works undertaken, which are almost complete, have stabilised the situation. The focus of the working group has now moved from an incident response phase to an investigation, enforcement and restoration planning phase. Two fora have been established by the agencies involved. One forum coordinates the investigation and enforcement work of the agency. The agencies involved are also coordinating inputs required from various specialists, while the other forum is leading their research into and planning of restoration works that will be necessary to repair the damage to the environment caused by the pollution event.
The Foreign Affairs Minister says the British government doesn't always behave as if they are looking for a Brexit deal. The transition period ends on December the 31st, with officials from the UK and EU continuing discussions for an agreement. The main sticking point remains around fishing rights. Foreign Affairs Minister Simon Coveney says legislation in the UK which intends to break international law isn't consistent with a country which wants a deal.
EU side, who are searching for a deal now, and there's the UK, who we believe want a deal as well. They don't always behave like that. And, you know, currently the talk in London is of the introduction of new legislation next week, may breach the withdrawal agreement, and then we would have two pieces of legislation that threaten to do that. That's hardly consistent with a government that's looking to build a positive partnership.
The government's confirmed state grant aid of more than €3 million for regional airports. Kerry Airport, Ireland West Airport in Knock and Donegal International Airport will all benefit from the money, which is aimed at safety and security services. €1.35 million of the money will go to Ireland West Airport, while €580,000 has been allocated to Donegal. On today's 9 till noon show, International Transport Minister Hildegard Nocton says it's important that regional airports such as Donegal are supported.
€3.4 million is being awarded today for the regional airports. That's Donegal Airport, Ireland West Airport, Knock and Kerry Airport. It's for operational costs. Donegal will be receiving €580,000. That will go towards targeted safety and security operations like air traffic control, fire services and security operations to ensure that they're compliant with the regulatory requirements. I know that Donegal, like many of our other airports across the country, have been severely impacted by COVID-19. So this is further funding to ensure that they remain viable. And as you know, last month as well, government put forward a revised package for the aviation sector, particularly targeting the airports. So Donegal, along with Knock and Kerry, can avail of up to €6 million, and that will be awarded next year. So my department is working closely with the airports in relation to that funding. We want the airports, our air aviation infrastructure, to be in a position where it can rebound as the virus comes under control. And of course, you're very well aware there of the PSO service between Donegal and Dublin. And of course, that service is being protected to ensure that we maintain all that core connectivity throughout this crisis.
The Dáil has been told that the government should mark International Day of Persons with Disabilities by ratifying the optional protocol in the UN declaration that was signed by the last government. In the Dáil today, Taoiseach Gillia Bradker said the government will do so once it's able to fulfil the commitments. The issue was raised by Donegal Deputy Thomas Pringle, who began by paying tribute to campaigner Frank Larkin, who passed away earlier this year.
Today, buildings in Donegal will be lighting up for Purple Lights 20 for International Day of Persons with Disabilities. In October, Gary Kearney wrote to me and asked for my assistance in bringing this campaign about. My friend and well-known outstanding disability rights activist, Frank Larkin, had been due to help Gary with the campaign for Donegal, but sadly Frank passed away earlier this year. And I wanted to take this opportunity to acknowledge Frank Larkin and the great advocacy work he had done in his lifetime for persons with disabilities. I would ask you for something that, that the government can do. Will you ratify the optional protocol of the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities so that persons with disabilities can make complaints to the UN if they want to?
Thanks very much, Deputy, and it is a very important day that you raise these disability issues. I want to thank you for raising them, and we'll be interested to see a copy of that survey if you want to pass it on to my office later on. When I was elected Taoiseach 3 years or so ago, one of the things that I said we would do on the first day I was elected was ratify the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities. We got it done, and I'm glad we got it done. And it was always our intention to sign the optional protocol as well, and it is. But we have to do it at the right time, when we're ready to do it, and make sure that we do it in a way that is meaningful, because a lot of countries ratify conventions, and it stops there. We do it the other way around in Ireland. We make sure that we can meet the standards of the convention before we sign it, which is what we did when it came to that convention. And the same will apply when it comes to signing the optional protocol.
The Children's Minister says survivors of mother and baby homes will see the final report of the Commission of Investigation before it's made public. The government is set to release the report in the week of January the 11th, when Minister Roderick O'Gorman will bring a memo to Cabinet. He says he has been engaging with survivors and families in relation to its publication. Minister O'Gorman says those dialogues will continue.
I have had significant engagement with survivors over the last number of weeks, and I'll continue to do so. I think that's been it's been extremely useful for me to hear firsthand of the absolutely shocking experiences that have been experienced and the different experiences by so many survivors. And I have committed that in my department's approach in future, we'll ensure that survivors are absolutely central in everything we do.
Highland Sport is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure Letterkenny, where the Christmas Club is now open. Click and collect or shop online 24/7 at michaelmurphysports.ie.
It's 5:15 and time for the latest in sport with Oisin Kelly.
Thanks, Michaela. We're going to start with rugby. Eric O'Sullivan is set to become the 11th player to win their first Ireland cap in 2020. The Ulster prop has been named on the bench for Saturday's Autumn Nations Cup third place playoff with Scotland. Andy Farrell's made six changes to the starting 15, with Jonathan Sexton, Robbie Henshaw and Bundy Aki returning. Cian Healy, Rob Herring and Peter O'Mahony come into the pack. Edinburgh's South African-born out-half Jaco van der Walt will make a Scottish debut at the Aviva. Gregory Townsend's made six changes there to the side beaten by France. Captain Stuart Hogg is set to win his 80th cap, while Duncan Taylor makes his first start since last year's World Cup. Dundalk will hope to earn their first points of the Europa League group stage when they play Molde in Norway tonight. It's an 8 o'clock start for their Group B encounter. The group leaders are Arsenal. They have, of course, already qualified, and they host Rapid Vienna. Celtic are away to AC Milan in Group H. That one gets underway just before 6 o'clock. Manager Neil Lennon is under pressure following a poor run, but defender Christopher Julien is backing his manager.
You know, the dressing room is just unified like never, you know. It's just like we're just so strong together. The dressing room and the player are behind the staff, and the staff is behind us. It's just, it never changed on that. The only thing right now is just the result.
Tottenham boss Jose Mourinho agrees his team are one of the favourites to win the Europa League. They're away to LASK tonight, having already qualified for the knockout stages. But Mourinho insists they're still focused on the game and not looking ahead to Sunday's North London derby with Arsenal in the Premier League.
We are in the race. We are one of the most important horses in the race. We had Chelsea last week, and before Chelsea we had Ludogorets, and we were not thinking about Chelsea. We made the changes that we thought we had to make. So in this moment, Arsenal is not in our mind.
Rangers will qualify for the last 32 if they avoid defeat at home to Stamford Liège tonight, while Leicester are in the Ukraine and they play Zorya. Manchester United will wait on the fitness of Marcus Rashford ahead of Saturday's Premier League game away to West Ham United. The England striker came off during last night's Champions League match against PSG with a shoulder injury. PSG won the game 3-1, of course. The Ulster Council have given the go-ahead to resume the Ulster Minor Championship later this month, following this week's decision by the Irish government and taking into account the restrictions in the six counties until Friday week, the 11th of December. A fixture schedule for the remainder of the minor campaign has been released. Luke Barrett's Donegal side will play their neighbours Tyrone in the quarter-final on Sunday, December 20th in Ballybuffet. All last eight encounters will be played that day, with Derry also taking on Armagh at Owen Beg. The semi-finals are due to be played on the weekend of the 3rd of January, with the final the following weekend, either the Saturday or the Sunday, the 9th or 10th. This coming weekend, the two All-Ireland Football Championship semi-finals take place at Croke Park. Ulster champions Cavan face the defending All-Ireland Kingpins in the six in a row chasing Dublin. The last team to beat Dublin in the championship, you have to go back to 2014. That, of course, was Jim McGuinness's Donegal. Damien Donoghue of the We Are Cavan podcast and Shannon Side FM says Cavan have to believe they can win.
Firstly, I think it would be a bigger shock if Cavan were to beat Dublin, because Donegal were after coming, you could see that Donegal team was getting there, and the evolution on the Jim McGuinness, and that was it was phenomenal stuff at that stage. I think if Cavan were to beat them, it would be an even bigger shock. There is the belief, though. There's no doubt about it. These players will believe that they're capable of going and doing it, and they have to. If you're going into a game like that and you don't believe that you're going to win, then there's no point in showing up at all. There is a confidence in the Cavan camp that Dublin haven't been tested, and that may be their opportunity, that Dublin haven't had anybody laid love on them since before the last lockdown. Every game has been at almost challenge match pace, and Cavan have gone to the well, have been put to the wall by Down and Monaghan in particular, and then came up against the Donegal team that they had to take it to them and done so. So there's definitely confidence is high in the Cavan team, but there's no doubt about it. Even if Donegal were facing Dublin this weekend, which most people were expecting, Donegal would have been underdogs, and quite substantially underdogs. So there's no doubt about it. Cavan are underdogs, but there's a confidence within the group that they can go out and if they can get them to the final quarter in touching distance, that they'll believe they can rattle this Dublin team.
We'll hear more from the Cavan commentator, Damien Donoghue, tonight on the Score programme, just after the 7 o'clock news. Martin McHugh will also give his thoughts on the semi-finals and indeed some of the other GA stories from this week. Plus, in our Ahead of the Game section, Liam Blanche of Boyle Sports once again will have his predictions. The Gaelic Players Association and the Women's Gaelic Players Association will host EGMs later this month to discuss a merger of the two associations. The player representative bodies approved motions at their AGMs last year to formalise the relationship between the two. Finally, in darts, there's a potential All-Ireland clash on the cards in the second round of this year's World Championships. Should he beat Nilis Zonoved in the first round, William O'Connor will go up against world number 11. That's Derryman Daryl Gurney. Defending champion Peter Wright will open his account against either Steve West or Ahmed Giltwall. And that's it for the moment here in Highland Mackilla. Don't forget the score later tonight after 7. I'll have our next bulletin tomorrow morning after 8:30.
Thanks, Oisin. And for weather now, cold this evening with clear spells and scattered showers. Showers will be wintry at times with icy stretches and snow accumulations in places. Lowest temperatures tonight of 0 to minus 2 degrees. A Stanish yellow snow ice warning remains in place in Donegal until midnight tonight. And just to have a look at the closing headlines, Ireland will have access to 16 million COVID-19 vaccine doses over the course of next year. The head of the HSE says it's possible the vaccine will start to become available here by early January. A review of student nurses' alliances is underway, according to the Taoiseach. Sonia, a student nurse from Donegal, says Health Minister Stephen Donnelly's argument over pay for student nurses is an insult. Donegal County Council has confirmed that the cross-border multi-agency working group established in the aftermath of the bog slippage at the site of Mean Bog Wind Farm near Barnesmore Gap continues to meet on an ongoing basis. And the Foreign Affairs Minister says the British government don't always behave as if they are looking for a Brexit deal. The transition period ends on December the 31st, with officials from the UK and EU continuing discussions for an agreement. That's all from Highland Radio News for now. You can listen back to a podcast of our main evening news on our website, highlandradio.com. Coming up next is Farming News and Views with Chris Ashmore, and we'll be back with an update again at 6 o'clock. Until then, good evening.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's edition of Farming News and Views here on Highland Radio. I'm Chris Ashmore. Coming up, we'll hear about a new scheme that will see farmers in Donegal being paid to re-wet bogs and plant native trees. But first, Chagas has confirmed today that it is to fund a COVID payment to Chagas students and provide a Chagas laptop loan scheme. Similar supports were introduced for third level students in other education institutions as part of a government initiative in Budget 2021 earlier this autumn. Well, to establish parity with the comparable learners, Chagas will now provide in the region of €200,000 to fund the combined cost of a COVID payment to Chagas learners and a Chagas laptop assistance scheme. Also, earlier today, the Minister of State at the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Senator Pippa Hackett, announced the launch of a new public portal for forestry licensing. The Forestry License Viewer will provide free online access for the public to view forestry license application decisions. However, the IFA President Tim Cullinan said that while it was important that the Minister had issued a statement to clarify the full extent of the backlog in licences, the actions announced by the minister would not solve the crisis currently facing the sector. He described the scale of the backlog as staggering, with 4,700 licences now stuck in the system, and he called for radical action. Farmers in the West and Northwest, including Donegal, are to be paid to re-wet bogs, plant native trees and carry out certain grazing management. Well, it's all part of a new scheme. Earlier today, I spoke with Amy Ford, the Deputy News Editor of the Irish Farmers Journal, to find out more. Amy, first of all, it's obviously good news.
Yeah, there's €20.6 million earmarked for this scheme to re-wet blanket bogs, Chris. The Wild Atlantic Nature Life Project is called. And it's going to be a 9-year scheme which will see farmers with blanket bog in 24 special areas of conservation, so designated land, across the West paid to restore the bog there. So you mentioned Donegal there, and there's a couple of SSE complexes and areas that are included, such as Clarnagore Bog and Glenveagh National Park, Sleabh League SSE, Tamur Bog and Coolvoy Bog are among the ones included. And I suppose there's a lot more areas in Donegal included, like this Pettigo Plateau and Meinty Grana Bog SSE is also included there. So any farmers with blanket bog on these areas are going to, you know, it's a voluntary scheme and they're going to be targeted to enter it.
Now, the thinking behind this, I suppose in many ways this is an attempt to reverse what's really been a decline of the blanket bog in the last couple of decades.
Yeah, so studies by the National Parks and Wildlife Service carried out over the last number of years have shown that the country's blanket bogs, which are predominantly located in these counties in the West, you know, that they're declining in their habitat. So their habitat isn't good. It's unfavourable, and something obviously they believe needs to be done about it. So this is the aim of the scheme. As I said, it's a 9-year scheme, and excuse me, and it wants to reverse the decline of the blanket bog and habitats within it and species such as the curlew or freshwater pearl mussel.
So do farmers apply individually, or what way is it going to work?
Yeah, so it's early days yet at the minute, and there's a lot to be ironed out yet in the scheme. But there will be a number of farmers approached probably in the coming weeks, early next year, to take part in the scheme, to be the first farmers into it, and then they hope to roll it out across more to more farmers to take part following those first farmers are brought on stream.
Now, there'll be a number of actions put into place in each of these areas. I see one of them is the control of invasive species, especially the rhododendron, which may look very attractive from a distance or even up close, but it certainly causes a few problems.
Yeah, that's right. And I suppose the rhododendron is an issue in parts of the country. A lot of people would probably be familiar with it in Kerry. So the control of invasive species, so rhododendron will be included in the scheme. You know, I'm sure there will be other invasive species included there, potentially if there's any Japanese knotweed, that's an invasive species. So the installation of dams to reactivate peatland, so putting that into norma speak is basically re-wetting bogs and putting in dams to basically allow them to soak up more water to bring them back to a more natural state, I suppose. The control of natural control of the natural regeneration of trees and shrubs is in there, and developing appropriate grazing management. So anyone with stock on these lands, sheep or cattle, they'll be looking at a grazing management plan for those. And I suppose the final thing that will be one of the actions in there is the pilot non-commercial restocking of these areas with native trees, so trees that are native to Ireland in parts.
Something in the region of 20 million is being allocated for this. Do we know over how many years?
So the scheme will take place over 9 years, but we're not sure. It's not been ironed out yet how much per year that'll be, or what the average payment per farmer will be, or how much farmers will be paid or can be paid under it. That's still to be worked out yet. But farmers will be, it's results based. So, you know, if you have a plot that you decide to put into the scheme, that plot will be scored out of 10. And depending on the amount out of 10 that you get, that'll determine the payment.
And do we know, is this specific to Ireland and maybe similar terrain like Scotland and Wales, or is this just unique?
It's kind of unique to Ireland, I suppose, post-Brexit, which is, you know, fast approaching. Ireland will be the only EU member state with a significant amount of this blanket bog habitat. So Ireland is going to become, you know, very important from an EU perspective. This land is very valuable in terms of carbon sequestration. So that's why it's been targeted there, I suppose. And I suppose something key the farmers listening might be concerned about, and it's always a concern with these types of schemes, is, you know, if you're re-wetting land, are you taking that land out of agricultural production? Technically, in one way you are, I suppose, but it depends on the definition and what way you look at it. But at the minute, there should be no risk to a farmer's BPS payment or their ANC if they take part in the scheme.
And do we have any idea as to when the finer details will be clarified and when people will actually be able to apply?
The early part of next year is my understanding that there'll be more concrete actions and timelines on the table, Chris.
Now, changing tack, Amy, farmers have been back at local marts since the country has moved out of level 5. What has the general feedback been as to how things are going?
Yeah, so the Farmers' Journal team has been around the country at marts over the last week, gauging the mood of farmers. And I suppose the key thing that people have missed was that social aspect of the mart, of meeting your neighbours or meeting people you've dealt with through cattle or sheep through the years, and having the chats with them, basically, or you know, meeting up in the canteen for dinner. That's the big thing that people missed. People missed seeing stock in front of them, actually, you know, looking at stock in the ring. They didn't feel that the online, that's what was missing in the online side of things. And while online definitely has a role to play for people, you couldn't really beat being back around the ring, talking to neighbours and friends, and actually seeing the stock that you could buy in front of you.
And the general feeling is that it's gone well. People are observing the social distancing rules and adhering to the guidelines?
Yeah, so masks are now essential in Mart. They have to wear them fully. From what we've heard and seen during the week, a lot of people are abiding by the rules. And I suppose the advice that's there is to, you know, wear a mask, wash your hands and keep the 2 metre social distance at all times if you can.
And that was Amy Ford, Deputy News Editor of the Irish Farmers' Journal. In other news, the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConnellogue, has reiterated his call on food and agribusinesses to urgently complete their preparations for Brexit to ensure that they are ready for the new rules and processes which will apply to the trade from the 1st of January. And finally, a new report by economists at Chagas estimates that the average family farm income in Ireland increased by 6% this year. A key driver of this increase has been a reduction in animal feed, fertilizer and fuel prices, along with additional subsidy supports for cattle producers to alleviate the negative effects of COVID-19 on the beef market. The Chagas Outlook for 2021, which was published this week, also showed that milk prices this year were equivalent to those in 2019, while beef, sheep, cereal and pig prices all increased. The milk, cattle, sheep and pig sectors also recorded production increases ranging from 2 to 4%, although cereal production fell by about 20%. The average income on dairy farms is estimated to have increased by 5% in 2020. By contrast, the average income on tillage farms is estimated to have fallen by around 11%, largely reflecting a sharp drop in cereal yields in 2020. And the average income on suckler farms is estimated to have increased by around 17%. Well, that's it for this week's edition of Farming News and Views. As always, many thanks for listening. Until next week, from me, Chris Ashmore, goodbye.
The obituary notices for this Thursday evening, December the 3rd. The death has occurred of Michael McHugh, Temple Oak, Dublin, and formerly Fannaboy Gorta Hork, reposing at his home in Dublin. Removal from Dublin, going to his home in Fannaboy Gorta Hork on Saturday. Funeral mass on Sunday afternoon in Christ the King Church Gorta Hork at 1 o'clock, with burial afterwards in the adjoining cemetery. Funeral mass may be viewed live on mcnmedia.tv/camera/Christ the King Gorta Hork. The death has taken place in Birmingham, England, of Cassie Tullin, née Dunyan, formerly of Corfrin, Ballybuffet. Requiem Mass on Monday morning in St Francis of Assisi Church, Handsworth, Birmingham, at 10:45, with burial immediately afterwards. Due to government guidelines, the funeral will be private to family only. Mass will be streamed from St Francis of Assisi Church. The death has taken place of Charlie McShane, 241 Ballycommon Estate, Strabane, and formerly of Donamana. Funeral leaving his home tomorrow morning at 9:20 for Requiem Mass in St Mary's Church, Melmount at 10 o'clock, followed by interment in St Mary's Cemetery, Clock Corps. In accordance with current restrictions, the house and funeral will be private to family only, please. The funeral mass can be viewed live via the parish webcam, melmountparish.com/webtv.html. And the death has taken place of Josie Bonner, Derry O'Connell, Duhurry. His remains will be leaving McGlynn's funeral home this evening at 6:30, going to St Connell's Church, Duhurry, for 7 o'clock to repose overnight. Rosary at 8 o'clock, with church open until 9 o'clock. Funeral mass tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock, with interment afterwards in Letchermack Ward Cemetery. Due to HSE and government guidelines, wake and funeral are private to family and close friends only.